Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and joining me from North America is my usual partner, Jeff Reinbold from Sky Sports coverage of the NFL. And Jeff, we're going to look ahead to week six. We're going to look back on a wild week five and look at some of the talking points and answer our reader and listener questions in the mailbag. But Jeff, just top line, first thoughts, what a week five it was.
Phenomenal football, and you know, last night I guess it was crowned by Le'Veon Bell's play at the goal line with 3 seconds left to go, and what a gutsy call by Pittsburgh, and you know, whether it's Todd Haley or Mike Tomlin or whoever. But you know, again, it was phenomenal football, and every NFL fan got their fill. Some, there are a lot of broken hearts, I'm sure, on Monday morning, and some people are scratching their heads because there were some games I look at and go, wow.
Yeah, we'll get into some of those games. The Bengals were down by 17 and they won. The Cleveland Browns were down by 12 and they won. Buffalo were down by 10 and won. The Chicago Bears down by 14 and they won as well. So it was the weekend of the comeback. Jeff, myself and Nick Pike, our producer of this podcast, we were talking today and we said this is the kind of week where you would want to make a 5-minute video of the NFL and show it to new fans, to maybe to a soccer fan, because it was the equivalent of a winning goal being scored in the 90th minute across the league. I mean, last night in Pittsburgh, Jay Cutler's touchdown was inside the last minute. There were games in overtime. I mean, it was just drama from start to finish.
Well, here's how, that's a great point, and here's how the National Football League has changed in the last 10 years. Neil, you go 10 years ago, and you're up by 18 points or 14 points or 20, even 10 points in the fourth quarter. Those are considered games that are, you know, in hand, and you know, you just salt those away. But with the rules changes, with the explosive plays and the explosive players that are in the National Football League today, no lead is safe. And I know that's a cliche, but it was really true over the weekend. And what a comeback weekend for kickers, you know, because a week ago we were wondering is, can anybody kick this ball straight? And then, you know, we had guys step up and make big kicks to win games at the end. So it is. It was a phenomenal weekend, and it was a great, a great advertisement for the National Football League.
All right, let's get into a couple of talking points. Now, I actually want to start in college football, Jeff, because everything's connected in football, whether it's college football or professional football in some way, especially with coaches who kind of chop and change between the two. But Steve Spurrier, the legendary coach who's been at South Carolina, is retiring immediately. They've got off to a 2-4 start. They were 0-4 in the SEC, and he's retired. So we can talk about Steve Spurrier in terms of, he only had 2 years in the NFL as one of those coaches who went from college football and didn't work out in the NFL. And then USC have fired their coach, Steve Sarkisian, their head coach. And there are already rumors that Chip Kelly could be in the frame for that job. So that's going to impact those of us who cover the NFL when we look at that story. And will Chip Kelly eventually be remembered as a Steve Spurrier type who was successful in college but not so much in the NFL? You've worked on both sides of that, Jeff. What are the differences and why are some people, I mean, Nick Saban, I mean, it goes up, there's a list of guys who've been more comfortable in college. You know, maybe that's the case with Steve Spurrier there.
Well, you know, you go back all the way to Lou Holtz, who left college football and was really, a young phenomenon in college football. He had done tremendous success at William & Mary and then at NC State. And he goes to the Jets and doesn't last a season. Yeah. It's a totally different environment. The locker room's different. It's a business. You're dealing with grown men. Some of these guys 30, 32 years old, they got families. It's just a totally different environment and dynamic. So, again, there's so many differences, the X and O differences, the interaction, the human interaction differences, the business aspect of it, the fact that in college you have much more control than you do typically in pro football. So for a head coach who comes from a situation where he has total control and, you know, has the final say in all things and then goes to pro football where, you know, you have to take the players into account, you have to take the general manager into account, the personnel department, the owner. It's just a completely different environment in most cases. You know, you look at a guy like Spurrier, and it's, I think it's a pretty good you know, pretty good justification or advertisement for why sometimes the situation in the system just does not translate to the game. And it's the same with players, because Steve came out of Florida and the old ball coach chucking it around, you know, the whole deal about, you know, we're going to throw the ball to win. And you know, he had a quarterback who was a tremendously gifted college football player, won the Heisman Trophy, Danny Werfel, who later became our quarterback in pro ball. And Danny just didn't have the arm strength to play at the next level, even though he was a great leader. He was a tremendously intelligent player, you know, but just couldn't make some of the throws because, you know, again, when you're playing, even in the SEC, when you're playing in college football, there may be one or two DBs on the other side that can make plays on balls that you throw. But then you get to the National Football League, and every single one of them can. And so Danny, again, just like Spurrier, couldn't translate his strengths to the next level. What made Spurrier such a lightning rod for controversy as he came to pro football was, you know, Steve's never been afraid to say what he felt. And, you know, if you remember this comment, that was at the time when it's still kind of a badge of courage, I guess, or whatever, for coaches to talk about what time they're in the morning and how long they work. And Spurrier was never that guy. He'd rather be off on the golf course than, you know, in watching extra film. So when he came to the pros, he ruffled a lot of guys' feathers by saying things. I remember Jim Haslett had made a comment about how he's in the office at 4 o'clock every morning. And Spurrier says, well, if he gets in at 4 o'clock every morning, it's not helping him very much, because Haslett was struggling to win at the time. And you know, and you just don't, that's kind of like taboo. You just don't say those kind of things. But that's Steve. He was going to say whatever he thought. And, you know, again, that created some ruffled feathers. And, you know, it was very early in the Dan Snyder era with the Redskins, and he comes in and, you know, what happens when you're a guy that's an outsider to the fraternity, and I'm talking about the NFL coaching fraternity, if you come in with a new idea or a new way of doing things, they're looking at you. They got the crosshairs on you right now in terms of criticism if it doesn't go perfect.
Yeah.
And I think he got just, you know, lambasted by the press after he made all those comments and then wasn't able to, you know, put a successful product on the field. And he's one of a long line of coaches at Washington that hasn't been able to do that. But it really, you know, he was only there 2 years and then said, I've had enough of this pro thing, went back to South Carolina, had a great run at South Carolina, and just this year it just hasn't gone well for him.
Yeah, I think what happens, Jeff, is that those guys come in with so much attention on them. As you said, they have been top dog in college football. So that was certainly the case with Spurrier, with Nick Saban, and probably with Chip Kelly. You know, he came in, everyone was wanting to pay attention to what Chip Kelly did. So I ask you this, I mean, is one of the biggest, you mentioned it there, they're going up against better talent. So that's a given. So you can't necessarily scheme some of the things you might do in college and get away with them. But do you think that one of the biggest things is that recruiting, and you can recruit who you like in college, there is no salary cap? Or do you think the bigger problem is how you're able to treat players in college? Because we've seen it in Philadelphia already. There's been finger pointing. There are disgruntled players. There are players saying, well, he treats us like we're in college. I'm a professional. I know how many hours I need to sleep. I don't want to drink that smoothie. All of that kind of. So is it the fact that you can't just recruit the hell out of the NFL, or is it the way you deal with the players? Which of those is a bigger problem for a college coach going to the NFL?
It's a little of both. You know, you look at a guy like Spurrier, I mean, you're at the University of Florida. Well, you're going to get great players. I mean, you don't even have to be a great recruiter at Florida, and you're going to get great players because the state is loaded with great college, high school football players. And to play at the University of Florida is, you know, that's what those kids dream about. You get to the NFL, and all of a sudden you find out that, you mean, I got to wait till the 12th pick of the draft to pick the guy I want? Well, I've never had to do that before, you know. And so the draft equals out the talent much, much, much more, right? And then on top of it, you know, like you say, you're dealing with a different animal when you're dealing with a pro football player than when you're dealing with a college football player. That kid's, you know, they come into you when they're 18 or 19 and they leave you when they're 21. Well, when you get to the pros, they, you know, you're getting them at 22. They got all kinds of money in their pocket, right? And so in college football, typically the coach is the focus and the players are second. When you get to pro football, it turns around. And even the great coaches, even the really, really outstanding coaches, have to be able, their ego has to be able to share the spotlight with the players. And I think the guys that over time have success, and there are a few that Bill Parcells being one, that kind of defy that. But the guys that can have success over a long period of time are able to sublimate that ego thing and recognize that it's about the players. It's, you know, it's about the players. So I think that's one of the biggest changes. If you talk to me about the Chip Kelly rumors to USC, I think here's my take, Neil. I think USC can pay whatever USC wants to pay, right? Yep. I mean, there is no shortage of resources at USC. It's a private school. It got all kinds of money. They have strong, strong alumni base that is committed to winning, that wants to, you know, whatever it takes. They're kind of like one of those whatever it takes schools. If it's dollars, they're going to get you dollars. If it's facilities, they're going to get you facilities. But I would be frankly surprised, unless this thing in Philadelphia unravels,
yeah.
I would be frankly surprised to see Chip make that, you know, make that detour back to the college ranks. I think he's, you know, and again, I know the guy, and I think he's determined to see the Eagles thing through. I thought that was good. They took a step this week, and that was, you know, wasn't the best defense in the world they're playing against, but at least they showed a running game, and DeMarco Murray got involved, and so on. So, I would be surprised on that Chip Kelly rumor. But again, if things unravel in Philadelphia, don't be surprised, because USC can, you know, pay whatever it takes to get him there.
Mm. For now, Chip's getting everything he wants in Philadelphia as well, which is, again, goes back to that control. He's been given control to build that roster, so we'll certainly keep an eye on that. You mentioned dealing with players, Jeff, and I want to talk to you about, and this comes about because I watched Greg Hardy absolutely terrorize the New England Patriots offensive line on Sunday night. New England won the game 30-6, but Greg Hardy was outstanding. And it was a weird week for the Cowboys having to deal with Greg Hardy, because Jason Garrett wasn't happy with some of the comments that he made. He said, you know, ill-advised comments about how he was going to come out all guns blazing. If you don't know all of Greg Hardy's unsavory past and story, you can go and check that out and you'll see that his comments were ill-advised. I don't think Jason Garrett was very happy with that at all. And then he goes out and has a big game. And then afterwards, it was a very, very weird kind of interviews in the locker room afterwards, talking about how he was excited to be facing the journalist, loved the aroma of the locker room. It was just a bit bizarre. It just made me think that he was a time bomb waiting to go off. So, you know, we're not going to name names here, Jeff. I know I've put you on the spot with this one a little bit. But, you know, as coach, how do you deal with a problem child player? Because I guess if they're producing on the field, then you want to give it every opportunity to work.
Well, you're right. That's the number one thing. If they're productive on the field, you try as hard as you can to educate them to the impact of their statements. Now, obviously, this guy is a guy, and let's talk about Greg Hardy. This is a guy who just doesn't seem to get it. And it's interesting, early in his career when he was at Carolina, you know, he nicknamed himself the Kraken, and, you know, he was considered kind of a flake, but a funny guy, and you know, there was no hint of any kind of dark side to him. Well, then the dark side emerged, and now he doesn't quite get that, you know, what you say has a huge impact. And it's been, frankly, embarrassing in a lot of ways for the league. And, you know, what is the big question, right, in terms of the league? And I'll talk about the league first and then coaching second. But what's a big question for the league is, how do you justify the Ray Rice deal where, you know, he's suspended and can't play and really is standing on the sidelines now? And here's another guy who, you know, had video of what he did surfaced just as bad, equally. I mean, neither is and has any business in pro sport and pro football, and yet he's out there playing. And, you know, you look at the Cowboys, and I'm going to say this about the Cowboys. They are less concerned with your character than your production. That's just the way Jerry runs that ship. And that's, you know, that's their choice to be able to do that.
Well, Jeff, I think that's what we're looking at here is the production, because we're seeing teams that have no interest in Ray Rice. I mean, Jamal Charles has gone down injured for the year now, and the Chiefs have said they've got no interest. So I think there's a football element to this because, you know, whether we like it or not, Greg Hardy was suspended 15 games last year. Yes, that was with pay, but he wasn't allowed to play. He was suspended 10 games this year by the NFL. So they've tried to take him out for 25 games. That got reduced on appeal. It got taken to the courts, and the NFL lost that appeal. But I guess because somebody still wants him on the field, that's why he's playing right now.
That's no question. Now, again, what that does is it puts your organization out there, right? And you got to be willing to withstand the criticism that you're going to get. And I think Jerry, frankly, doesn't care. I mean, he's going to do it his way. And then you put Jason in a situation where he's got to try and manage the guy. And it's not just Jason. It's everybody inside the organization. It's his defensive line coach. It's the, you know, PR guys. All those people have to try and manage this guy's personality because he can't manage it. And, you know, I think as long as you're productive, and this is just the way it is, this is the business of the business, as long as you're productive, you can get away with a certain degree of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But when your production declines past the point that you're an embarrassment to the club, then that's when you see these guys out of football.
Yeah,
they look at you with that, what, me?
Yeah, he will have no second chance.
They never get it.
No, he will have no second chance because, as Thomas Davis told me over the summer, he got a second and a third chance when he tore his same ACL with the Carolina Panthers because he was a good guy in the locker room. He was a guy who could be relied on. He was on time to meetings. He never caused the franchise any problems. Somebody like Greg Hardy, the team will use you and say thank you very much every time you're recording a sack. The minute he messes up or looks like that production is not what it used to be, he'll be gone. And then he'll be, you know, he'll be contemplating a long time after football, won't he?
Well, and he, you know, he's going to make a ton of money and all that. And, you know, but again, the question, if you, I'm sure, because I've dealt with these kind of guys, I'm sure if you ask him, he just doesn't get it. He just doesn't.
Yeah.
Again, for whatever reason, you know, here's an opportunity for a guy to do tremendous good because he made a mistake in his past, right? Because I really believe this. NFL fans and basically the human beings have forgiveness in their heart. If you're contrite and if you want to, if you want to do the right thing, mm-hmm. right? And so if you're talking about, let's say, domestic violence, which is what he was involved in, here's an opportunity for him to come out and, you know, do work on himself and then encourage others to, you know, be a spokesman for, you know, domestic violence prevention. But that doesn't seem to even register on his radar. Mm. So, again, you know, that's an unfortunate situation. The guy's a great football player. There's no question about it. And certainly the Cowboys, the way they're playing defense right now, they need every football player they can find. But, again, he comes with a steep price tag.
Let's move on. I've got a nice positive upbeat story to counter that one then. The NFL's owners have signed a resolution which means they can extend the ability to play international regular season games. Where we're talking through 2025 now, Jeff. This new deal, basically it's an extension of what goes on in the UK, but it also means that the NFL can look at playing in other markets. So we've seen stories recently about a potential return to Mexico. Germany is on the list. Mark Waller, the executive vice president of NFL International, even talked about potential for the Pro Bowl to be in Brazil. So this is a good extension. I think it gives security to what the NFL are doing in the UK. But I don't think it. I had a couple of questions on this on Twitter, and you can weigh in a second, Jeff. But I thought I'd just address this. A couple of people. Well, that's the end of the franchise thing. Then I don't think the two are. You know, they're not necessarily attached. This is basically just giving a time frame for the NFL in terms of we are going to be playing games internationally until 2025 at the least. That doesn't mean they're not still changing or chasing or building towards a franchise, are they, Jeff? This is just a time frame that's been put in place.
No, I agree with you, Neil. And I think, you know, one of my initial reactions to that was, ooh, I hope that doesn't mean they're going to start pulling games out of the UK. Mm. I think, and as you think about it more, and logically what this is now is basically a call out, if you will, to the rest of the world that, hey, you know, we're interested in expanding our game globally. Mm. Now, are there places, and certainly Mexico City, and I'm sure there's a contingent of people in Germany, and, you know, I do not be surprised if, like you say, Brazil for the Pro Bowl, what a great trip. You know, they're trying to get the players to go to the thing and to play in it. Yeah. Well, you know, take them to Rio in February, and which is their summer, and, you know, the beaches and all of that. What a great idea. I mean, what a great idea. I think it's all good. I think it's just another example of the league working to expand the game internationally. And, you know, a lot of again, it all goes back to that same thing. Had it not been for Alistair Kirkwood and all those people at NFL UK who stuck their necks out those, you know, 10 or 15 years ago and said, we can make this happen, you know, this would never be the case because the game actually – The NFL was contracting its international scope in, you know, 2005 when they shut down NFL Europe and they were pulling back from the international commitment. Well, what Alistair and the people at NFL UK did was they said, hey, we're going to go out. We believe this can happen. They convinced them to put a game over there, and then the UK fans took it from there. And now, with the success of the international series in the UK, because it failed miserably in Toronto, with the success of the international series in the UK, now the NFL is opening its eyes to potential around the globe.
Yeah. We had a question in the mailbag from Jamie Herbert, who said, should the fact that the NFL is talking about games in Germany and Mexico, etc., be a concern to the UK fans? Will it mean fewer games here? Jamie, I actually strongly believe that the two are not linked. I think I agree with Jeff. It's just this is a chance to send out a message to Australia. It's a chance to send out a message to China. It's a message to Japan. It's if you want a game, we have a resolution in place. That means we can make that happen. Now, we are going to be very strategic about it. We're not going to be like the American Bowls in the 80s and 90s where we turned up in Barcelona, then Stockholm, then all over the place. I don't think it's going to be that way. They even played an American Bowl game in Australia. I remember that. So it's going to be strategic, but they know where the success has been so far. And the NFL aren't going to be reducing games here. You may see a few years where we stay at three games, but eventually we will be moving up in games. I strongly believe that, Jeff.
I agree with you. And I think this is really good for the game. I think it's good for the game internationally. And, you know, certainly not in any way, in my humble opinion, not in any way a negative for the UK series.
All right, we're going to look at week five then. Not going to go into every game. We never do on Inside the Huddle, but just look at some of the things that caught our eye. Then we're going to... Actually, Jeff, we're going to have a new section today. We're going to have a new segment. You don't know about this. I like to put you on the spot. We're going to have a new segment called They Said What? And I'm going to read you three quotes. All I'm going to do is read you the quote and then let you comment. All right, so you didn't have a clue about that, but I like that surprise, that element of surprise. We're still going to answer a couple of your questions in the mailbag, make our picks for week six in the NFL. Jeff, it was a weekend of wild comebacks, incredible games. But I just one guy who I want to pick out and mention this week, he was a quarterback nobody wanted in Cleveland. He's just delaying the arrival of Johnny Manziel. He was a quarterback of the Hartford Colonials in the UFL in 2010. But he's had three straight 300-yard passing games. He had 457 yards against the Ravens on Sunday. Josh McCown, what a job he's doing then. And we always talk about the Browns haven't got any receivers.
It's amazing. You know, here is a guy. That's the all-time Cleveland Brown record for passing in a game. And, you know, you're talking about Bernie Kosar, Brian Sipe. You know, there have been some guys.
Otto Graham.
Otto Graham over time. And, you know, you're talking about the all-time record. That's amazing. And like you say, here's a guy that had that one hot streak in Chicago when Cutler went down.
Yep.
And you saw flashes of it, but he's never has never been able to sustain it over time in his career. Well, maybe now this is, you know, the second or third chance that he's needed to really be the guy and to take a team. And boy, if you're a Cleveland fan, wow, do you feel good about this? Because, you know, he shopped around in the off season, and there were teams that were interested, but it wasn't like he was a high priority free agent.
Mm. What games caught your eye then, Jeff? I mean, I'll just go through a couple of the ones. Obviously, Cincinnati beat Seattle in overtime. There were three overtime games. That Cleveland-Baltimore one, Baltimore's defense, oh boy. And Atlanta beat Washington in overtime. But there were lots of close finishes. Which ones do you want to talk about here on Inside the Huddle?
Well, I think Seattle is a place we got to start because, yep. You know, obviously they've been a Super Bowl champion. They were in the Super Bowl again last year, and here they are struggling. Now, they've had a tough road schedule, you know, again, all of those things you can say yes. But what I see in Seattle, what concerns me if I was a Seahawks fan, is number one, you can't protect the quarterback. Mm. You got a mobile quarterback who's been sacked. Going into the game, he'd been sacked 18 times. You got a mobile quarterback who you can't protect. You went and got Jimmy Graham, and Jimmy Graham has been not invisible in the offense, but he's not been a big part of the offense. And if he's not a big part of the offense catching the football, then he's not a part of the offense because he's not going to help you as an inline blocker, as a tight end.
Jeff, that's bad coaching, isn't it? That's the stuff we were talking about in Miami last week with, you know, Ndamukong Suh not being in the right system. I mean, we've hardly seen Jimmy Graham split out wide, creating those mismatches that he did in New Orleans. I mean, that's why you went and got him. That's why you gave up Max Unger in a first-round draft pick, surely.
Yeah, it's tough. It's, you know, you give up a Pro Bowl center who's the heart and soul of your offensive line, and then you go out and get a tight end, and now you can't find a way to get him involved. And, you know, I'm talking about really involved. Like, you see Tyler Eifert involved, the tight end from Cincinnati the other day. But that's a concern. And then you see the Seattle defense just really struggle couldn't protect a lead. And granted, it's on the road, and Andy Dalton was hot, and, you know, Eifert played out of his mind and all that. But you look at that defense, and that's certainly a defense that in the past would have just, at that point, when you're up and you're forcing a team to throw, they would have teed off and, you know, been sacks and interceptions all over the field, and they would have closed the game out. They haven't closed the game out yet. So I think there's reason to be concerned in Seattle, because Arizona has shown that as long as they can keep, you know, Carson Palmer healthy, they're going to be a factor. And, you know, the Rams didn't win, but you see enough in the Rams to know that they're a team that can, you know, that can beat you too. So Seattle's got to get it going.
Yeah, the Rams showed us something in a loss at Lambeau Field, I think. Bobby Wagner got injured for Seattle in that game. We'll check out his status in the coming days. Jordan Hill looks like he's going to miss a couple of games at defensive tackle as they're getting banged up. I find the whole Jimmy Graham thing fascinating, Jeff, because when the Saints played against the Seahawks a few years ago in the playoffs, you know, all those Seahawks players were calling out Jimmy Graham for not being tough enough and for being a bit of a wimp, and they roughed him up. Now he's in that locker room with them, and they're asking him to do that blocking, and he clearly can't do it. I mean, that all creates a kind of negative vibe around this team, around this offense.
And you know, he's not happy, and he's voiced that unhappiness with his role and the fact that, you know, he wants to be split out and he wants to be a featured guy in the pass game. And, well, he's not in that offense anymore, and he's not with Drew Brees anymore. And, you know, that's, again, like you say, that comes down to asset, you know, if you call it asset management. You know, I mean, here's an asset that can do certain things extremely well, but he has liabilities in his game. That's why New Orleans was willing to give him up. But you've got to use those assets. You can't. It's a, you know, the same thing that we talk about with DeMarco Murray in Philadelphia. To me, the jury's still out on whether he fits in that system, because DeMarco Murray has always been, all the way back to his college days, a guy that's stood back there and you ran the zone play and he's downhill and he made cuts. And you look at his, when he had his greatest success with Dallas, that's what he was doing. Mm. Now he's in that zone read system where he's running laterally to get vertical. And, you know, that just hasn't gotten his rhythm. You know, Watching Seattle, I mean, watching San Diego last night, Melvin Gordon's a little bit that same thing. He, you know, you look at his college tape and you say, wow. Mm. I mean, but that was when he was in the pistol or in the eye and he was coming downhill. He's learning to be a back in that, you know, in that San Diego system, but it's not, it's been a, not a tough adjustment, but he just hasn't had the impact. You can see it in him. You know, you see him when he catches a swing pass out. He's got all that stuff that you saw in college. It's just he's trying to take his game and change it and create a kind of a new identity for himself as a running back. So, you know, it's tough. Asset management, man, that's tough. You gotta get your guys to do what they do best.
Well, I guess that list of running backs who struggle to make the transition from college football to the pros is same as their head coaches. I mean, you can get away with a little bit of dancing in the backfield in the college level. Reggie Bush was able to do that and then turn his field and go the other way, Marcus Allen type style, you know, from the Super Bowl back in the day. You can't do that in the NFL. They're all a bit quicker, Jeff.
They're all quicker, you know, and again, when I was at Hawaii, we played against USC, and Reggie was there with Leinart and, you know, that great USC team. And, you know, there have been two guys really on that I've been on the field with that their speed made you go, whoa. And, you know, they were just totally at a different speed than everybody else, and that was Rocket Ismail and Reggie Bush. Mm. But when you get to the next level, when you get to the pro level, when you get to where everybody is the best of the best and everybody can run, you know, it's tough sometimes for those guys to, I'll use the term a dancer as a running back your whole life because you had such awesome speed, you could get away with it. Well, then you finally get to the point where all the other guys on the field can run too, and they're better coached and they take better angles and all those things. And it's sometimes some guys never adjust. Some guys can never make the transition.
Here's a question out of the mailbag from Tom Marshall, who says, is it time to start believing in Andy Dalton, or do we wait for that elusive playoff victory? Dalton, of course, is 0-4 in the playoffs. He survived a roughing up on an interception return from your boy, Michael Bennett, Jeff, and he came back, he led him back. And I felt it was a big test because we always say, oh, well, Dalton's a rabbit in the headlights in the big games. They were down 24-7 in front of their own fans, and it looked like they were going to fail that test. And he brought them back. You know, whether it's Seattle have problems on defense, you still got to bring them back. And he did that. He threw a touchdown pass to Eifert. He ran for a touchdown. You know, he hurried them up and led them to a couple of field goals that won this game. I thought it was impressive from Dalton.
It was, and I think that what you saw out of him that you haven't seen in the past is kind of a firm resolve when things started to fall apart.
Yeah.
Right? Like you say, they were 24-7 down, and there was none of the what we've seen out of him in the past, the bad body language, the deer in the headlights look, as you say. There just seemed like a firm resolve that he was going to make plays and continue to get in there and, you know, throw it and lead his football team. The guy that I think needs a lot of credit here is Hugh Jackson, his offensive coordinator, because he's done a great job with him. And, you know, from the minute Hugh got the job, he came out publicly and said, my guy's an elite quarterback. And I think that was the start of maybe Dalton believing that he can, you know, be that guy. Now, you can mouth it. You can say, yeah, I believe I'm an elite quarterback. But you have to do it on the field of play. And your body language and your play, your production, has to reflect that. It's now started to be that way. I've always been lukewarm on the guy, and I still am a little lukewarm on the guy. Mm-hmm. But he's impressed me so far this season. And, you know, hopefully for him, this is him now taking that next step. And, you know, but the question will be, the final question will always be, can he win in the playoffs?
And it will. It'll be a fair question until he does it, and then we'll all move on. That's how we operate in the media. And Hugh Jackson is getting a huge amount of credit for his game-to-game, week-to-week planning, Jeff, because, you know, if he's going to become one of these next coordinators to make the leap up to head coach, that's what you have to do as a head coach. We see the Patriots morph from one team to another from week to week. It seems this Bengals attack is doing the same thing. Yes, they have a lot of talent, but they can also hurt you a lot of different ways. And Hugh Jackson's getting a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, and he should, and he should. Mm-hmm. And that's a good group of players that he's got around him. And, you know, they've got running backs. Giovanni Bernard, I really, really like his game. But Tyler Eifert really is the one that, to me, has been the difference in the Cincinnati offense. You know, that those tight ends that can do what he can do, and there aren't very many, but the tight ends that can do what Eifert can do down the field in the pass game really give the quarterback a sense of security, if you will, in the pocket, because he knows he's going to have a place he can go with the ball all the time.
One last subject from week 5, quarterbacks. So Dallas lost 30-6 to New England, and Jason Garrett said he's going to consider a change in the bye week. So it could be Brandon Whedon out, Matt Cassel in. Cowboys fans should remember that Matt Cassel wasn't wanted by the Minnesota Vikings or the Buffalo Bills any longer. So I'm not sure he's riding to the rescue on a sort of white horse or anything like that. But and the other one, Gary Kubiak's had to start a defense of Peyton Manning. So we wondered how long, because these kind of questions, you're a brave journalist if you ask these sort of questions. Peyton Manning is NFL royalty. And Gary Kubiak was asked if the Broncos would consider benching Peyton Manning. So he threw another two picks on Sunday night. Denver beat Oakland 16-10, but it was another victory based around their defense. Manning is one of four starting quarterbacks with more interceptions than touchdowns this year. Denver are averaging 1.7 touchdowns per game with Manning at the helm. Just by way of comparison, when Tim Tebow was their quarterback, they averaged 2 touchdowns per game.
Well, I think those are all numbers that are indicators of a problem. And, you know, frankly, this is hard to talk about. You put Peyton Manning in the same sentence with not playing well enough, right? Or, you know, putting Peyton Manning and Tim Tebow in the same sentence is, you know, it's like hard to even do. But the reality of it is, and it happens to everybody that plays the game, there is a point where your skills just decline that much. Now, Kubiak has tweaked the offense to try and make it more Manning friendly, if you will. But you look at the numbers, right? And, you know, I've heard it said that statistics can be skewed in any way you want, but the reality of it is, the cold, hard reality of it is, right now he's in the bottom quarter of the National Football League in production at the quarterback position. And that's Peyton Manning we're talking about. Never, ever did I ever think that we would say that. And, you know, but that's just where it is right now. For whatever reason, you can blame it on the system, you can blame it on his age, you can blame it on his arm strength, the receivers, you can put the blame anywhere you want, but the reality of it is, that's what Denver's faced with. And Kubiak's going to be faced with an incredibly difficult challenge, is if it continues, they can't continue to rely on their defense to win football games. They've got to get offensive production, and they've got to get offensive production in the passing game, and if they don't, then Denver's going to struggle, you know, as we go forward.
John Elway built this defense 2 years too late, Jeff. Imagine this defense with that team that faced Seattle in the Super Bowl, with that offense that they had right then. It's 2 years too late.
I'm going to tell you something. They are something on defense now. You watch them play, and they can get after the passer, and they've got great people in the secondary. They can run. They're physical. That has been the reason why the Broncos are winning right now. It certainly has not been the offense.
All right, Jeff, let's go to our new section called They Said What. Okay, so I'm just going to read you out a quote, and I want you to react to the first thing that comes to your mind, all right? So all right. This first one is from Miami Dolphins interim head coach Dan Campbell. He says, "We're about to wake the sleeping giant." What do you think?
I love it. You know, I love it because he's going to do it. And, I mean, here's the thing. You're an interim head coach, right? You got two choices. You can be beige and you can be that, you know, just like blend in and hope and don't rock the boat and hope that you might win a few games and you know, somebody will like you and give you the job. Or you can come out and go the other direction, which is, I think, more my personality, to go out and say, hey, listen, we're going to get this thing done. Let's go. And, you know, we're going to wait with all that stuff and go that direction. And if it works, you are going to be the man, right? Mm-hmm. But if it doesn't work, they're going to look at you and go, what a nut job that guy was. But that's just the way it is. I mean, there's been a long line of guys, not a long line, because typically NFL head coaches don't do that kind of stuff. But, you know, Jared Glanville was the same guy.
Jeff, what do they always say? You got to be yourself, right?
Yeah, and Steve Spurrier was the same way, and there have been others that have been that way that just said, hey, this is what we're going to be, and we're going to, you know, we're going to punch people in the face and all that. Well, Dan Campbell's got a little of that personality, and I think that's good for the Dolphins, frankly.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the players will respond to that. That's, you know, that's the way Buddy, that's the way Buddy was. That's the way Rex is. You know, Rex has never backed off. You know, what was his comment when he was at the Jets? I didn't come here to kiss Bill Belichick's rings.
Yeah, people like that.
Now, people like that, but you set yourself up when you go down that road, right? Because he was able to beat Belichick once, I think, in six tries or whatever. It was more than that, actually. But you know what? Obviously, Miami needs some of that right now.
Yeah, absolutely. A bit of bravado. I wonder when he said about waking the sleeping giant, if he was talking about the team or in Dominican Sue, but either way is good. Either way is good for me. This second quote then, Jeff, comes from Arizona Cardinals quarterback Carson Palmer. I love this quote. He says, I love Sunday night after the game. You win, you go to the parking lot, grab a beer, and hang out for a little bit. Do NFL quarterbacks go to the parking lot and have a beer with the fans?
Well, I don't think he means with the fans, but I think he means because typically those parking lots are restricted access.
And
the fans never even get a chance to see those guys. But, you know, again, that's, you think about Carson Palmer, and here's a guy at the twilight of his career who, you know, was supposed to be the savior when he came to Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
And he did have some good years in Cincinnati, but eventually it didn't work out. And then he went to the Raiders, and that didn't work out. And then he's found, kind of in the desert, he's found, you know, a career again. And I think that's got to be a lot of fun when you've struggled and people have told you you're washed up and you can't, you're done, and you know, go on with your life and all that, all the other stuff that, you know, starts to be out there when you're struggling and you're an older player, and then all of a sudden you get united with a guy who, you know, just, they're on the same page in Arizona. I think his relationship, you know, with the coaches there is so good, with his, you know, with his ball he threw to Fitzgerald on the goal line, the little slant route on the goal line, it's about a 5-yard completion.
Yeah.
But it was almost like when you watched it, as I watched it as a coach, it was almost like they had a telepathic communication that just when the ball had to be there, just where it needed to be thrown, just the perfect route. And so, you know, you talk about his relationship with Arians, his relationship with Fitzgerald, his relationship with the community in Arizona is, I mean, I think this is a great, great thing.
I think it's right place, right time, as you say, Jeff, because when that trade was made from Oakland to Arizona, we kind of all looked at it and was like, well, you know, Carson Palmer is what he is. He's a 300-yard passer every week, but he's 3 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. He now looks to me like the Arizona Cardinals looked at the back end of Kurt Warner's career when Warner was on fire week after week, and it just goes to show you the value of a franchise quarterback.
Absolutely, but you know, at that time, exactly like you said, it wasn't exactly like the state legislature in Arizona was going to say, okay, we're going to create another, you know, state holiday and let the kids out of school because we got Carson Palmer. I mean, it wasn't that kind of deal. It was kind of like, oh, yeah, okay. You got Carson. Okay.
There was no Carson Palmer Day. There wasn't.
No. You're right. There might be if he takes him to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, there should be. Last one then. This is from Mike Tomlin. So it comes from last night. They had a chance to kick a field goal and send the game into overtime, Pittsburgh Steelers against the San Diego Chargers. Tomlin has no timeouts left, but he rolls the dice, and Le'Veon Bell gets in for the game-winning touchdown. Jeff, are you a movie fan?
Yes.
Okay, I don't know this, because I've not watched the Godfather films, but Mike Tomlin said, of the play call, he said, it was time to go to the mattresses. Is that one of the Corleones?
Well, if it hadn't worked, it might have been time to go to the fishes. If you know what I mean.
Yes.
You know,
it had a horse's head on his pillow.
Dragging you out in the lake and throwing you to the fishes. Now, you know what? I thought that was a great call. And I'm not a Mike Tomlin fan. I'm going to tell you that straight up. You know, I've seen him mismanage more games than manage them well. But what I did like about it was that you're on the road, right? And this is important. You're on the road. When you get down to these, whether you kick a field goal or go for it deals on the road, you go for it on the road. Mm-hmm. Because you don't want to, if you're playing at home, you kick the field goal, get it to overtime, right? Give Phillip Rivers another chance.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
on the road, in a hostile environment, and it wasn't that hostile, actually, because it was more, it seemed like there were more Steeler fans than San Diego fans. San Diego fans are amazing, man. They just, they're so laid back. They kind of give you the opera clap and you know, Steeler
fans. Well, they
fans
wonder where their team's going to be,
towel.
Jeff. Huh? They wonder where their team's going next year. That's why.
but you watched it, and it was, he captured the you know, they were on a roll, right? Mm-hmm. And you got to have belief that your players are going to make a play. And Le'Veon Bell, let's face it, it wasn't the greatest of all play calls in the history of football, because Le'Veon Bell had to get about a third effort to get it in
yes,
the end zone.
He did.
But he put it. He did. This is where I think it was smart. He played to win, and he put it in the hands of his best player at the most
yeah.
critical time. That's good coaching.
Yeah, he chose Le'Veon Bell over Chris Boswell, the rookie kicker, basically. So what that did, Jeff, for us in our picks, it saw me drag a couple back. I went 9-5 this week, and you went 7-7. So I've dragged a couple back. I haven't got the total numbers, but I'm pretty sure you're still winning. So that was They Said What. Did you like that? Can we do that next week?
I like that. I like that. But you know what? Let's talk about the. You know what? I was feeling really good about it. Most of the. You know, there were some games. Actually, frankly, like the Bears game. Right. I'm watching the Bears game. I'm going. Got this one. Next thing I know, I look at the Bears win. What?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And the same thing with the Seattle game. Right. I pick Seattle going to Cincinnati. They're up 24-7. Said this is over. You know, flip the channels. Come back. What? You know, just was that kind. It was that kind of weekend in the National Football League.
Yeah, I won, but I did pick Detroit to beat Arizona. What the heck was I thinking there? Let's get on to Week 6 then, and it starts with Thursday Night Football, the Atlanta Falcons at the New Orleans Saints. And Jeff, I like what I'm seeing out of the Atlanta Falcons at the moment. Devontae Freeman running the ball very well. Julio Jones is actually banged up, so he's not been as involved recently, but they're still getting the wins. It's not as tough to go to New Orleans as it used to be. I'm going to pick Atlanta here.
You know, it's such a crazy thing with Atlanta. They seem to have their mojo right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're watching Jacob Tammy making plays, you know, and it's not like it's what I'm saying is Julio Jones is hurt, and all of a sudden a guy that nobody could cover,
yeah.
you know, is out of their offense basically, but they still find a way. The running back is outstanding. They're running the football. They're physical on defense. They're playing like they expect to win, right? And if you've ever sat down, and I remember last year when we were at the Super Bowl together, I had an opportunity to sit down with Dan Quinn for an extended period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that you come away with after you talk to Dan Quinn is, good God, that guy's positive. He's one of the most positive guys I've ever been around. And I think that has translated into his football team. And you look at them, and they weren't playing very good. And Washington was, you know, taking it to them. And, you know, they didn't panic. They just kept playing and believing something good was going to happen. And that's kind of where they're at right now. This is an Atlanta team. When you look at it, their schedule, it's not out of the realm of possibility. If they can continue to play the way they're playing, they could be 9-0. Mm-hmm. And who would have ever thought that?
Yeah. So you're going to Atlanta.
I'm going to go with Atlanta. I just think that right now New Orleans is in a bad, bad place. I see what's going on the sideline between Sean and Rob, and you know they can't stop the run. And if you can't stop the run, Atlanta's going to give you a whole nose full of it. And it's a short week preparation-wise. Now it's in the dome, and that's going to be a positive for the Saints, but. You know, this is a big rival game. These historically, these two teams don't like each other. So I think it's going to be a physical, nasty hitting game. But I think Atlanta's going to win.
I'm going to take this question out of the mailbag, Jeff. And this will actually do the mailbag then with questions for this week. But Joseph Worley says, after Sunday's performance, do you think Drew Brees is just getting old or does he need better protection? I mean, Andrus Pete had to step in for the injured Teron Armstead and he got totally abused by Fletcher Cox. So... You know, I think Brees, if given, actually, Jeff, a lot of quarterbacks around the NFL. I mean, when you look at a quarterback who's playing badly, we were talking about this in the studio on Sunday night. It was when I talked about Matthew Stafford struggling, then I looked at it and I was like, well, that offensive line is really pretty bad in Detroit. And then I talked about Colin Kaepernick. And Kaepernick, you know, I'm not a fan of Kaepernick's at all. And I think he's got I think he's got no pocket presence. Their accuracy and awareness is not there. Yes, he played better on Sunday night, but that looked, and Kaepernick's one of the most sacked quarterbacks in the NFL. So it's all linked together, isn't it? And I think Breeze does need better protection. If he had that better protection, he'd look a better quarterback than he's looking right now.
Well, the greatest quarterback in the world, and I mean, you talk about whatever one you pick, right? He has a really difficult time throwing the football when he's laying on his back. And I mean, it's hard to complete passes off your butt, you know? And that's basically what's happening to Breeze. And, you know, here's, if you've ever stood next to Drew Breeze, one of the things that will shock you initially about him is just how short he is. Mm-hmm. You know, he's well under 6 feet.
Yeah.
And he's, so again, it's hard. He's got to have lanes to throw. And that, you know, that if you don't have that, and he's got an arm issue now on top of it where he doesn't have the zip on the ball that he did, well, that just puts more and more pressure on the offensive line. And then now you've got backup offensive linemen in there, and they can't – when he's really good is when they're playing from a lead, when, you know, they can do the play actions, they can do all of those things. Now, he's a great quarterback, and he has proven that he can play from behind and throw the ball 50 times if they need to win. But right now with his pass protection and with his, you know, issues with his arm, that's not where you want to be. And so when the defense can't stop anybody and they're playing from behind the entire game, it puts an enormous amount of pressure on him.
All right, let's move on to Sunday's games then. And our first one is our first game on Sky Sports, actually. It's a good one because it could be quite a chess match here. Cincinnati at Buffalo. So we know that Rex Ryan likes to scheme lots of pressure, brings lots of exotic blitzes. And we know from statistical point of view, Andy Dalton has been one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL this year going against the blitz. I'm going to pick Cincinnati to win this one on the road just because I think their offense has a few more weapons at the moment that are firing than Buffalo's, Jeff. But this is a fascinating game.
Yes, it is. Now, the thing that as I look at Buffalo, I just... are they good enough on offense? Hmm. You know, can they in a game, can they score 28 points if they need to score 28 points? And I just don't see that right now. I've never been a big, like I said, I've never been a big Bengals fan. I've never been a big fan of Andy Dalton, but he's kind of making a believer of me. And so I'm gonna agree with you. I'm going to think they're going to go up to Buffalo and they're going to find a way to win.
All right, so we're both going Cincinnati in that one. The second game on Sunday, Denver at Cleveland. So, Jeff, I always seem to... the reason I think I'm doing so badly in these picks is because I just pick the favourite quite a bit. But there's always upsets in the NFL. I think Cleveland are going to beat Denver this week. There's no DeMarcus Ware. This is one of those stupid ones like I picked Detroit last week. But I'm going to go Cleveland with the hot hand at quarterback. I'm picking the Browns.
Well, I'm going to take the Broncos, and I think that while it's obviously going to be tough losing DeMarcus Ware, I just think that, you know, my old buddy Coach Phillips is going to find a way to show this quarterback some new looks and different things and pressures that he hasn't seen. And, you know, again, I think this is a really good test for Denver to go on the road in Cleveland in bad weather, because it shouldn't be nice and tough. You know, that's a hard place to play. The fans are all over you. This will to me kind of be a little bit of a test for the Broncos and see just exactly where they're at.
All right, Chicago. So you're going Denver, I'm going Cleveland. Chicago at Detroit. So the Bears were without both their starting receivers last week, Alshon Jeffrey and Eddie Royal, but they get the win. That's two in a row for the Bears, and they're up against the last winless team in the NFL in the Detroit Lions, who looked absolutely awful. I can't believe I picked them last week. They're a mess. I'm going to go Chicago to get back to 3-3 with a win on the road.
Okay, now I want you, all the fans here, I'm going to give you a little inside stuff. I have a very close friend on the Bears staff, and I sent him a text after the game and congratulated him on the win. And this is what he said. Guys kept battling. Quarterback is a tough son of a gun. Scrambles and zone read keep with pulled hamstring. All right, now we're talking about Jay Cutler.
Yeah.
All right, so everybody wants to bash Jay Cutler, but Jay Cutler got an awful lot of traction with his own team by how he played in that game. He was hurt. He had a pulled hamstring, and he's out there making plays, keeping the ball. You know, everybody remembers Jay Cutler for taking himself out of the game with the knee injury, and you know what a firestorm that created. But this might be the, you know, a glimpse into the future of what John Fox can have in Chicago. I really am a big John Fox fan. And I'm not, not particularly a Jay Cutler fan, but I think this is starting to be something positive in Chicago, and I think an opportunity to go up there Detroit. Oof, you talk about an underachieving team. I thought they were, and I thought Caldwell had got them to the point where they were, not a Super Bowl contender, but certainly a divisional crown contender. But they have not played at that level. So again, I'm gonna go with my Bears.
All right, great stuff. And Jeff, great inside information there. And I didn't know that the team mascots could text that much stuff with the big, those big hands. Brilliant.
I said on coaching.
No, I thought you said someone in the organization. I thought, probably the mascot is close to everyone on the sideline. And let's rattle through a couple of these because we're getting close. We're going to be over an hour and 10 minutes every week at this rate. There's a lot to talk about, right, Jeff? I mean, come on.
Hey, man, it's the shortchange the listeners, my
listen,
brother.
What else are we going to do? You've got to coach a professional team. I've just got to sit and do this. Is all I do.
Yeah, so. we're in the middle of a divisional race right now.
All right, let's
go. Our ninth win last weekend, man. 9-4, still finding. Still staying in first place, but I'll tell you what, it is razor thin.
See, I'm always have mixed emotions, Jeff, because as a friend, I want to see you do well, but I want you in the studio with me as well. The longer you stay in that playoff race, we have to wait for you to get over here. So let's go to Houston at Jacksonville then. So Jacksonville, oh, come on, guys, put it together. The week before against the Colts, the defense plays well, and the offense doesn't show up and score a point in the second half. This week, Bortles explodes for 303 yards and 4 touchdowns, and the defense goes missing. Frustrating, but I think Jacksonville... I keep wanting to pick them, Jeff, because I think they're going to come good at some point. I'm going to pick Jacksonville to win at home.
You know what? I'm going to go with Jacksonville, too, and not because of Jacksonville, but because of what I see in Houston.
Yeah.
Here's the Houston Texan defense with the best defensive lineman in the National Football League, maybe the best defensive player in the National Football League, playing against a 40-year-old backup quarterback in Indianapolis, and they can't get him on the ground one time.
Yeah.
Can't get him on the ground one time. And this is an offensive line that has been ridiculed because they can't protect the passer. There is underachievement all over the field, all over the football field in Houston, and until that changes, I have a very difficult time, picking the Texans.
All right, talking of underachievement, the Kansas City Chiefs, they go up and face the Minnesota Vikings, who are coming off a bye. I'm going Minnesota in this one. Chiefs are going to miss Jamaal Charles, and I think Minnesota are not much improved, but they are improving under Mike Zimmer.
They're improving, and they're improving in every aspect of the game. I don't see the same out of Kansas City. Obviously Jamaal Charles is going to be a huge loss to them. Neil, here's the thing: when you look at Andy Reid's record in Kansas City, he got off to that amazing start the first year, but since that time, his record has not been stellar.
Nope.
And so I think that the real Kansas City Chiefs are starting to We're starting to see the holes in them. And I think, again, Minnesota is a team on the rise. I think Zimmer's doing a good job up there. So I'm going to take Minnesota with you.
Yeah, Jeff, Kansas City have lost, they've won just 3 of their last 11 games. Let's move on to Washington at the New York Jets. Washington showed me some stuff at the weekend, but I'm going to pick the Jets in this one. I think Washington are kind of on the right track, but I think the Jets, with that defense and Brandon Marshall, if they can ride Chris Ivory, there's enough here for the Jets to get a win at home.
It's hard to imagine how big a struggle Jay Gruden has had at Washington with all the things with RG3 and he's had to change coordinators on defense he has done a really good job, I think, because that team is getting better and you do see signs of improvement defensively. They're way better than they were 3 years ago. But again, I kind of like these Jets. They play great defense, and they've got enough weapons on offense that they can hurt you. So, I think the Jets are going to win this one also.
All right, both going Jets in that one. Arizona at Pittsburgh. So, Bruce Arians going back to his old team. I like what I see out of Arizona. What about you, Jeff?
I'm going to take Arizona, I think, for a couple of reasons. Pittsburgh's coming off this huge emotional win, but they got to travel back. You know, again, anytime you're talking about travel back and forth across all those timelines to get back home, that's tough on you. I think Arizona plays certainly much better defense than San Diego does. I just think that Michael Vick showed some signs in the second half particularly, but I just don't know if he's good enough to beat you. And I think the Arizona will win this one.
All right, both going Arizona in that one. Miami at Tennessee. I think Miami do get the knee-jerk reaction. I think they show the right reaction to an interim head coach. What did you make of him doing the Oklahoma drill, Jeff? And he had a lot of these competes, you know, what you coaches call competes. He had receivers and corners going one-on-one in Miami in the one practice he had before they went off on their bye week. He used up one of the 14 padded practices that teams are allowed. He had offensive tackles going against defensive ends. And, you know, a lot was made of a really physical practice that Miami had under Dan Campbell. I'm going to pick Miami to win this game, but what did you think of that?
Well, those are typically things you do in training camp. And I think the way he looked at it was, this is going to be my training camp. This is where we're going to find out a little bit about these guys, you know, and set the tone for what we want. And I thought it was really smart to do it before they went away to their bye week, because he left, I'm sure, an indelible impression on that entire football team that, there's a new sheriff in town. I'm pulling for the guy, right?
Yeah,
I'm pulling for the guy, and I want to see him succeed, and I want to see, you know, I want to see some of that $130 million contract get, you know, out of Ndamukong Suh. Get him in a gap and let him run up the field and let him be disruptive and be the guy that they paid for instead of the guy that sits on the line, squats on the line, and two gaps all day. So, I'm rooting for Dan Campbell, so I'm gonna take the Dolphins. I think Tennessee's better. I think Mariota's the best of those two rookie quarterbacks, but I don't, you know, again, with the emotional thing that you're talking about, that bump that I think they're going to get from Dan Campbell, I think the Dolphins will go up there and win.
Okay, into the late games. Oh, we had a funny echo there, Jeff. Can you hear me right now?
Yeah, I'm good, mate.
That sounded like I was singing. It sounded like I was singing to you for a second. It's always the challenges of
that segment of the show. We can do without.
Yeah, we can edit that out. Carolina at Seattle. This is a tough one for the Seahawks, but they are at home, so I'm leaning towards Seattle. Carolina are unbeaten. They're coming off a bye. Maybe Jared Allen has a big game against that offensive line, but I think Seattle at home get this one.
Well, if you're Seattle, now it's hard to say. What are we in, week seven?
We're week six. Week six.
Right, we're in week six. It's hard to say that this is a must-win game. But for Seattle, I think it's I won't say must-win, because until you're in elimination football, they're not must-win games.
Right.
But this is a monstrous game for Seattle.
Yep.
I mean, a monstrous game for Seattle. Because let me tell you what happens when you go through a collapse like they did. Players begin to look around, and typically where they look is not the guy staring back at them in the mirror when they're shaving in the morning. It's everybody else around them, and the fingers start to be pointed. And, you know, even Pete came out and said, I was baffled by the way we played in the second half, their inability to stop anybody. So I think this is a huge, huge one for Seattle. Obviously, Carolina coming off a bye week. If you look, Carolina is habitually bad coming off of bye weeks, and they've got to travel from the East Coast to the West Coast. I think all the indicators are Seattle here.
All right, both going to Seattle there. San Diego at Green Bay. So San Diego dropped a close one at home. Aaron Rodgers threw a couple of interceptions at home, which was the first time since 2012. But I am going Green Bay in this one.
You know, I really like. Did you see the way that young DB Verrett played in the game?
Yes.
Boy,
yeah.
I thought he played great.
Took Antonio Brown out of it quite a bit, didn't he?
Yeah, particularly early, really competed and played and challenged and did a lot of good things. I just don't see enough around him, though, right? In that San Diego defense, and I'm you gotta say that Dom Capers you know, as much as he was criticized 2 years ago, and it's time for him to move on and all that, has really assembled a pretty doggone good defense in Green Bay. And Clay Matthews is, you know, I think one of the top players in the league. It's at Green Bay. So, again, I think this is a win for the Packers.
All right. So that's both going Green Bay there. Baltimore at San Francisco. Baltimore been a massive disappointment. They're struggling in the secondary. They missed Terrell Suggs, but it's not all Terrell Suggs. They're involved in shootouts every week. I think San Francisco put in an improved performance against the New York Giants. I'm going to go San Francisco to get their second win at home this week.
Boy, this one is a hard one. This one is a hard one because you just, you know, you look at it, you don't like either team, right? You got one guy who's playing good enough at quarterback, another guy who's not playing good enough at quarterback. One defense is playing, you know, show signs of life in San Francisco, and Baltimore, which has been, one of the powerhouses on defense in the National Football League for the last 15 years. It's like they're allergic to tackling. I don't know what to do with this one, right? You'd say it's in a toss-up game that because Baltimore's traveling west, because it's at San Francisco, that you would give this game to San Francisco, but I'm going to go the other way. I just can't believe Baltimore is this bad. So I think they're going to bounce back. If they don't, I'm off of them for the rest of the year.
All right, last chance for the Ravens then. The Sunday night game, we have that on Sky, is New England at Indianapolis. We just still don't know the status of Andrew Luck, but I don't think it matters, Jeff. I think Bill Belichick comes up with a scheme, with a system, with a way of winning this game. They, as long as Belichick's there and Tom Brady's there, this is a Super Bowl team. How many other teams around the NFL can shuffle their offense? They have an offensive line rotation. We always talk about you need continuity on the offensive line. They sign a running back who hasn't touched a football since 2012 in Deion Lewis. He develops into a star. That's what the Patriots do. So I'm picking New England to win.
I tell you what, they never cease to amaze me, right? And Belichick is phenomenal because you look at that. Now, everybody talks about Brady and should because he's playing, you know, outstanding football. I mean, he's playing with a chip on his shoulder. I don't know, but I'm telling you, he's playing it's maybe his best football in years. Mm-hmm. But nobody talks about the defense and who they got on defense. I mean, you lose Brandon Browner, you lose Darrell Revis, you lose Vince Wilfork, you lose all these guys, and you think they're going to take a step back on defense, and no way.
Up pops Jamal Sheard and guys like that. Sheard.
But you know what? That's just a validation of Belichick and his coaching methods and the program that he's built. And like you say, it's almost like it just doesn't matter. Injuries on the offensive line, we'll get a guy. Mm-hmm. You know, running back, how many running backs have had a great game in New England in the last 5 years? I mean, it's just like you plug them in, right? Go get a guy off the street. We'll coach him up. You know, I watched Julian Edelman go and just break a DB's ankles the other day in press coverage. And, you know, you look at that and you say, Julian Edelman was a free agent, undrafted free agent. I mean, not a free agent. He's a late round draft choice, I think. But he's a guy that, you know, was a college quarterback that they converted into this guy who's now, you know, it's amazing.
Jeff, I can't wait till you get over on the Telestrator and you can talk me through how many pick plays this team runs and gets away with. And on Sunday, they got flagged for a pick. And then they came back and ran a pick straight away on the next play, and Edelman goes off for a long touchdown. I mean, it's just very – and sometimes they don't even touch the cornerback. There was a play on Sunday where Gronkowski went across the formation, and Byron Jones looked like he was going to get picked by Danny Amendola, and Amendola didn't touch him. And actually, Byron Jones would have been better off running into Amendola and then putting his arms up in the air, but he kind of slowed just for a second, and it allowed Gronkowski to go across the field and make this big catch. And they're so clever with all that stuff.
Yeah, I tell you what, and if you're going to play man, you're going to struggle with them. You look at their personnel, right?
Yeah, when you
look
at their wideout personnel.
You say, hey, we're going to play man-to-man. We're going to just go lock down these guys because none of them can run.
Yeah.
Right? But that's fine. But you better, you know, you're going to have to deal with all the picks and rubs to get that done. It's not like they're just going to sit out there and run hook routes all day.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to run crossers and they're going to run, you know, what we call hide routes and, you know, bang routes and
yeah.
all the things that, that you do against man coverage. And they were so well coached. I mean, so well coached. And particularly with at the quarterback position, because he knows you can blitz him and you can lock it up man, but he knows always where to go with the ball. Very rarely do you see him get hit. And, you know, that's credit to the offensive line and the offensive line coach who's you know, had to shuffle personnel. But really, it's a system thing.
Yeah. I think the New England Patriots, people moan about, oh, we've got to see the Patriots in the Super Bowl again. We'll look back in many years to come and we'll say this was a historically special team at a special time, well coached, incredible stuff that they do week in and week out. Jeff, are you going New England in that one?
I'm going to take New England.
All right, so we're both going Patriots there as they roll on. They play the Indianapolis Colts in Sunday Night Football. Wrapping it up then on Inside Huddle, our final game of Week 6, the New York Giants at the Philadelphia Eagles. So Giants have now won 3 in a row. Have the Eagles found their recipe for success? Do we trust Sam Bradford now? These will all be questions that we might get further answers to on Sunday evening. I'm going to pick the Giants, Jeff. I think they're having to fight, but they're fighting and clawing and scrapping. I think they're the best team in the NFC East, which is why I'm picking them. But again, two teams that I don't completely trust yet.
Well, I don't trust the Eagles yet. Mm. I thought that was a step in the right direction for the Eagles. But I just don't. There's something about me that makes me want to. And I've never been I think the Giants are what the Giants are.
Yeah.
Solid.
Yep.
I think they're just solid. And right now, solid in the NFC East makes you the best team in the division.
Yes,
because the Cowboys are struggling and are going to continue. They can't play defense right now, and they have horrible quarterback play until Romo gets back. And Dez is out, and then you look at Philly, and you know we're not sure what they are yet. And Washington's getting better, but they're still not a good football team. So really, because of the fact that they're the best of four bad teams, you know, you got to look at the Giants and say they're the best team in that NFC East until somebody can knock them off. And you know, that's why I'm going to stay with the Giants in it.
All right, so we're both going Giants there. And Jeff, that's us done. That's just the 1 hour and 12 minutes, I reckon, by the time we've said goodbye. You know, I mean, I need to go and eat some lunch. You need to go and coach some pro ball. So that's probably time to call it quits. What do you think?
Let's do what we do best. You eat lunch, I'll coach.
And on that note, this has been Inside the Huddle in association.
Hey, I got to tell you, I seriously, as much as I'm wrapped up in this divisional race, much as I'm wrapped up in this, I cannot wait to get back there because, you know, it's just so much fun talking football with you.
All right. Well, I can't wait either, even though you just took a shot at me. I do like to eat lunch. So, you know, I'm not going to lie. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We appreciate your support again and for downloading this podcast. Until next week, say goodbye, Coach.
Aloha.